Good morning, party people, and welcome to Newport, Wales. It's about 2 hours west of London. I'm here for the Sequel Bits Conference. It's an annual conference, moves around from place to place in the United Kingdom. And this year it's in Newport, Wales at the International Conference Center. This is one of those 360 videos, so you can, over there, you can see the conference center itself. It's nice out in the countryside. There's like a golf resort here. There's a really charming Celtic resort over here that's like the hotel for speakers. Just beautiful. Got in yesterday. I tend to get in like 2-3 days early to get used to the jet lag. And we'll see how the jet lag goes today. I never can tell. I'm teaching an all-day session on Wednesday, so I wanted to get in a little early and be ready to go for that. So why not go through your top voted questions from PollGab? Top voted questions from Jersey, who asks, has Microsoft fixed any of the bugs in the merge command? And is it worth using in its current state? Well, whenever you hear about something having a lot of bugs, you would also expect that whenever it's fixed, you would also hear us trumpeting how it's been fixed. You have not heard any of that. From time to time, people go and blog again, going back and revisiting the bugs, and they're all still there. So unfortunately, no, it is not a feature that I would recommend using in its current state. Maybe at some point, Microsoft will invest the money needed to fix that feature. Until then, I would avoid that. Next up, let's see here. Chris asks, hi Brent, after you've addressed a performance emergency, are there cases where you recommend table structure changes as a better long-term resolution? If so, what are some examples? I'm going to give you the classic one, because normally I can't talk about some client stuff work, especially you can imagine if somebody hears and goes, oh my God, those were our tables. But there's one that I can talk about publicly, and it always is such a good example, is Stack Overflow. At Stack Overflow, you could tag a question with up to 5 tags, C#, SQL Server, Cursor, you know, you can apply up to 5 different tags. In the beginning, those tags were stored in a single column on the post table, which is where questions are stored. So if you wanted to find out if a column was tagged with, say, C#, you had to scan that whole entire column, because it was just one column that had up to 5 tags in it, and the column could be anywhere in that string. Well, SQL Server is notoriously inefficient CPU-wise at parsing strings like that. So not only did it have to shred all the string, it also had to shred through all of the rows, because you couldn't just jump to the C# row. After all, it could be tagged alphabetical or something else like that. So that was a case where after several years, the CPU usage was so bad that they switched out to normalizing that. So that's a great example. Let's see here. Next up, Flat says, what makes you say that queries from monitoring tools are optimized? Whenever I catch them on SP Who Is Active, they are far worse than what is in the first responder kit. So you're experiencing something called survivorship bias. Google for survivorship bias and you'll see. But what you're noticing is you're noticing the queries that are slow. You're not noticing all the queries that are fast. Notice how you said when I catch them in SP Who Is Active. You didn't say that every time you run SP Who Is Active, all the top queries are from those third-party monitoring tools. So I kid you not, 2 weeks ago I was dealing with a client where all of the top 10 were their monitoring tools, were all their monitoring tools. And I just had to say, hey, do me a favor, let's shut off your homegrown monitoring tool for a minute. They're like, oh my God, server's way faster. And I'm like, yeah, you were always excluding your own monitoring queries from the monitoring, but you can't do that as a commercial monitoring vendor, and they have to tune a lot of their stuff. Speaking of monitoring stuff, Fail to Fail says, what do you think about Eric Darling's monitoring tool? I haven't used it personally because I noticed when Eric brought it out that he was going to be doing a lot of rapid iteration to it. Whenever a software product comes out for the first time, there are going to be a lot of rapid changes to it quickly. So I didn't want to jump in and use it right away because I knew that a lot of other people would jump in and use it right away, and that would cause a lot of iterations to happen. So I'm kind of waiting like 6 months or so before I jump in and start using it. But I know Eric very well. I know his work very well. He and I have the same styles of working. So I know that it will be a great product, and I fully expect to use it as part of my consulting as I start consulting. I just couldn't afford to learn something that's going to rapidly change for the first several months. Plus, I had a lot of other stuff going on. But you should jump in and take a look at it, especially if you're dissatisfied with your monitoring product today. The one thing that I would say is it's focused on performance monitoring, not uptime monitoring. So when most DBAs need stuff for like long running agent jobs, or the service has stopped, or there's an availability group's failure. So don't, when we say monitoring, those of you who haven't looked at it, keep in mind that you probably still want a regular monitoring product for now at least, but it's really focused on performance tuning work. Let's see here. Used to be a DBA says, Brent, where do you see the enterprise IT industry in 20 years? I have no idea. I wouldn't even begin to guess. I can't even imagine, because like think about it, 5 years ago we didn't have LLMs. 20 years ago we had just started to see the beginnings of the cloud, like Azure SQL DB came out around about 20 years ago. So you just can't predict what innovations are going to happen across the span of 20 years. I would say that inside the span of 3 years, I don't expect much to change in the mix of on-premises versus the cloud. You know, there's still a lot of companies that are either went to the cloud and are coming back, or never went to the cloud. I'm not saying that's the majority by any means. It feels like a mix back and forth. But I know that usually when I do shows of hands at conferences like this, these days it's usually about 80% of the people have something in the cloud, and about 80% of the people still have something on premises. So it gives you just a rough idea. Because of course companies have both. Storage Bottleneck says, my user databases are too big for my limited hardware to do CheckDB, but they're all in availability groups with 4 nodes. Is automatic page repair enough to keep me safe? Dude, if you've got availability groups with 4 nodes, you should be offloading over to one of the secondaries and doing CheckDB there, because no, automatic page repair is not enough to keep you safe. Go run CheckDB on your secondaries. Since SQL Server 2019 came out, part of the licensing was that you get a free replica to run CheckDB on. Now, I'm summarizing a lot here. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but go read the SQL Server, like how to license SQL Server docs from Microsoft. They're very good. I recommend them highly. Go start doing that. Joy of SQL Coding asks, hi Brent, as of today, what SQL version is more stable for production, 2022 or 2025? For me, 2025. Yeah, if you want to read more about that, search for Brent Ozar, what version of SQL Server, and I've got a post that I wrote maybe 10 years ago, and I keep it current. Once every year or so, I go in and update it, and I just updated it in the last couple of months, talking about why you should be on 2025 rather than 2022 or 2019. In terms of stability, all of the versions going back to 2017, everything that's currently supported, have all had security patches on the same cadence. Like if you were applying security patches as they came out, you would have had to take an outage regardless of what SQL Server version that you're on. So, yeah. Next up, Rookie DBA asks, hyperthreading on SQL Server with a high core count, yay or nay? The best is, of course, to test on production-like traffic, but that's a giant pain in the rear. Default to hyperthreading on until you have a reason to do otherwise. When you hit a reason to do otherwise due to CPU caching issues at near 100% CPU usage, for example, that's going to be different, but default to hyper-threading until you have reason otherwise. Next question, T. Earl Grey Hot says, I've had mixed results with SQL loops. Most I've eventually seen run out of memory, have large spills, and have high CPU, da 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 da. What is the difference in loops that spill versus loops that do not? the quantity of data, the more data that you have moving through an operator, the more likely you're going to run into performance problems. Every now and then I see people hyper fixated on like exact operators and execution plans. Step back and say, the more data that you have to shuffle in order to call, to serve a purpose for a query, the more likely it's going to be slow. So rather than focusing on which operators are getting used, take a look at what you can do to minimize the data moving through the plan. Like step back and say, do I have the right filters? Are my indexes being used appropriately? Am I eliminating rows early enough on? Then by the time you get to the point where you say, no, I actually need a million rows worth of data moving through this operator, great, that's a report. You should be in batch mode execution plans, and you're not going to see loops when you're moving through millions of rows through a plan. I should say too, though, okay, so there's a possibility that you're like a Stack Overflow level of operations where you're trying to get a query down from, say, 10 milliseconds to 5 milliseconds. That's different. It's extremely rare, and so I don't usually assume that people are doing stuff like that when I hear a question like this. So I would say if you're one of the people who's trying to get a query down from 10 milliseconds to 5 milliseconds, you're not going to be able to ask questions on PolGab and get good answers. That's when you usually have to bring in a consultant because the answers are so specialized at that point. It's kind of like how the analogy I usually use with clients is like, if you need to go to a car mechanic, there are car mechanics all over the world who can help with basic problems that satisfy 99.999% of people out there. When you're trying to win a Formula One race, you're gonna have to have a full-time team of mechanics working for you, and they're gonna be the best mechanics that you can imagine. So that's different. You're not gonna be able to just post an ad out and go, hey, anybody, can anybody tell me why my turbocharger is not properly getting to the right vent temperature in order to start on the Formula One grid? You're just not gonna get good answers out like that. You have to have a team of professionals. You could read that as a plug for my consulting work. Let's see here. Next up, Craig says, how do I do an integrity check of a 15 terabyte database that has a small window of 6 hours of non-critical use, offload it to a secondary and an availability group? If you got a 15 terabyte database, you can't afford downtime for things like high availability or disaster recovery, so you probably already have an AG replica. You want to be offloading that over to an AG replica. There's not a magic easy button. Once you get up over a terabyte, it starts to get a little challenging. Next up, Ricardo asks, hi, Brent, do you feel one day you will ever have passive income, or are you constantly creating or updating your courses? So this is interesting. So for about 5 years, I had enough training material that was current that I didn't have to update anything. And during that period, I had a lot of passive income. So much has changed recently in SQL Server between like Query Store, Intelligent Query Processing. Now these days, the tools that we're using with AI, the tools that I'm building, I'm announcing a brand new script here at SQL Bits in Wales just for the attendees. So that the tools are changing so rapid fire that I think it's going to be a while again before the material has stabilized. I think that probably in 12 months, my material will be stable enough again that I'll have more passive income where I don't have to do, and I don't do live training classes anymore except for clients and for conferences. But that'll shift back over more towards passive again. Anonymous asks, out of curiosity, is there a reason you didn't expand your career to performance tuning other components like SSI, SSAS, or Power BI? Yeah, it all simply just comes down to the fact that you can't be an expert on everything. You can never know enough about everything. I know people who are jacks of all trades, but they just don't get that deep. And so that really is just why. Same as the people who you see who are experts in performance tuning SSAS or Power BI, don't know as much about the engine. Like they'll say, hey, I'm able to find which queries are slow, but I can't do anything about the specific execution plans. If you want someone to help you with the execution plans, then you go get somebody else. So there you go. Let's see here. Aramasta says, I'm not understanding remote DAC connections correctly. I have a job that failed to kick off because it said could not continue with the maximum number of one dedicated admin connections already exists. If the setting in sys configurations is zero, why am I still seeing this? Great question. You are misunderstanding it. The maximum number of connections is one period. Just because it says zero in there, that's a totally different setting. What that setting is can people connect remotely or not? So if the answer, if when you go to SP configure and you see remote DAC, that is just can people connect remotely, zero or one, it's a yes or no binary, but the maximum number of connections regardless is always one. Do not use a job to connect to the DAC, because then when emergencies strike, you won't be able to get in. The dedicated administrative connection is for administrators like you, not for jobs. Let's see here. Interesting. Flyboy asks, SQL Server 2022 standard versus enterprise. What's the decision process for one or the other? Do you need it money-wise? What's more efficient? Going up to Enterprise Edition at $7,000 a core or throwing more hardware at it on Standard Edition? What I'll generally tell clients is, if you haven't put in at least as much power as a good gaming laptop, don't go to Enterprise. I want to see at least 16 cores of CPU. I want to see at least 128 gigs of RAM before you even think about going to Enterprise Edition. Lower than that, it's not worth it. Yeah, I'd start there. There are many, many more other differences, but that is the place that I'd always start people with. Next up, Nobody asks, Hola muchacho, have you had any issues with installing or running SQL Server 2025 on Windows Server 2025? Even though I'm local admin, I'm having permissions issues, GUI's not starting. No, I haven't had any problems like that. But of course, you didn't put anything in like an error message. It's hard for me to troubleshoot errors without the error message. Sean says, in a recent office hours, you said you and Claude were learning together about new functionality. One of my vendor libraries broke with an update and documentation is sparse, and it seems like forums are out of vogue. Can you share your experience breaking new grounds with AI? Yeah, I love Claude Code for troubleshooting bugs. So I have a dedicated set of VMs that I just refresh from templates all the time. So I can just point Claude Code at it and say, I'm having this problem. Here are a couple of SQL servers. I'm saying a couple because I was just troubleshooting one involving linked servers, where I can tell Claude Code, hey, here's a couple of instances you can go play around with. Here are the problems that I'm seeing in production. Can you see if you can reproduce those issues? And it'll just go churn away trying to figure out what they are. Using SQL command, making different settings changes, trying to see if it can reproduce the error. That I love it for stuff like that. Because the other reason I love it is that I can just have it go off in the background and go do things for tens of minutes while I'm going on and doing other things with clients, for example. It's great for them. Now, you said one of my vendor libraries broke with an update. Go call the vendor. Right? Because you don't have the source code. And what are you going to do even if you find a problem with it? You have limited capabilities that you can go do. Go call the vendor. That's what support is for. Cam says, hi, Brent. I loved your post about making an AI agent of yourself. I've gone wild and created a panel of experts. So far, it's you, Eric Darling, John Skeet, and even Paul White has dropped by. It's wildly entertaining to work with you all. Thank you so much for this awesome idea. I'm glad you liked it. If you're liking that kind of thing, check out Silly Tavern. Silly Tavern. It is a really slick little chat program that's designed to let you create different character cards for different people. And so, like, I have a marketing expert, I have a small business accounting expert so that I don't bother my accountant all the time. I have a search engine person. I mean, like, all these different character cards that I've created, and they have memories and give them different personalities. Like, one of them is, I'm not going to go into the, I give them stereotypical personalities. Think of like a bar, like Cheers bar from the old TV show. So I can give them different personalities. They respond differently. So it makes them like my lovable coworkers. Let's see here, and I'll do one more. I'll say, used to be a DBA says, hi, Brent, I just got back from FabCon, and I realized that many of the great conversations I had with presenters post-session might have been for nothing. I forgot to introduce myself. How do you handle meeting new people at conferences? Do you exchange business cards? No, because for me, the quantity of people is so high that I don't do business cards. One of the nice things about Apple phones is you can just hold them up and you can do bumping. And when you hold them up to someone else's phone for a second, they do this magical thing where they exchange conference cards or business cards. And so you don't have to have an app installed or whatever. It just immediately switches your contact information back and forth. And you can edit their card right then and there to include how you know them or where you met them at. So it's super simple. It works really well. And I hate to say that, but that means that I don't get any contact information from people on Android phones. But I'm like, well, that's your problem. Kind of racist like that, I suppose. Not that people with Android phones aren't cool. I have an Android phone as well. They're fine, but I just don't exchange contact information with them. And I'm also like, well, if you want to find me, you can go Google Brent Ozar, and I'm out there on blogs or whatever. The other thing that I'll do is take pictures instead of trying to exchange like contact information. I miss taking pictures of people because I'm much more of a visual. I'll remember people's faces. I don't remember names at all. And I also go, I don't really talk to people much after the conference. I'm terrible about that. Part of getting older, I guess, I'm going to be introspective for a minute. Part of getting older is that I feel like I have enough friends. I'm not lacking for friends. And I'm not going out looking to build more. So when I was younger, what would I do? When I was younger and I was going to conferences and I was trying to make friends, I still didn't bother with business cards. What I would say is when I found somebody that I was really interested in spending more time with, I'd be like, hey, let's go out to lunch or let's go out to dinner. What are you doing right now at the conference? Can we go sit and have coffee somewhere and build a longer connection, a deeper memory? Because some of those people who are younger are also trying to make connections too as well. Yeah, that's probably where I would start. All right, it is cold here. No fooling. I think it's what, 40? Yeah, 43 Fahrenheit. So I'm going to go back into the Celtic Manor and go have breakfast here. Hopefully, I will see you at the Sequel Bits conference here in ICC Wales. And if not, have a great day and hope you enjoyed office hours. Adios. Bye, everybody.